ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So continuing our reading from the 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes, continuing with text 26. There's no purports through the end of the chapter, so I'll be continuing until text 5 of the 13th chapter, and we'll do that verse. So I'll just read the English translations up until then. Thereafter, the objects of speech, along with the sense of speech, the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given to the demigod Indra. The power of movement and the legs should be given to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure, along with the genitals, should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum, with the power of evacuation, should be bestowed in its proper place unto Mrityu. The aural instrument, along with sound vibration, should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instrument of touch, along with the sense objects of touch, should be given to Vayu. Form, with the power of sight, should be bestowed upon the sun. The tongue, along with the demigod Varuna, should be bestowed upon water. And the power of smell, along with the two Ashwini Kumara demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. False ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature, and which induces one to think, I am this body, and everything connected with this body is mine, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the individual living being. And the demigods acting under the modes of material nature should be merged, along with the perverted living being, into the supreme being. The earth should be merged in water, water in the brightness of the sun, this brightness into the air into sky, the sky into the false ego into the total material energy, the total material energy into the unmanifested ingredients, the pradhan feature of the material energy, and at last the ingredient feature of the material manifestation into the supersoul. When all the material designations have thus merged into their respective material elements, the living beings who are all ultimately completely spiritual, being one in quality with the Supreme Being, should cease from material existence, as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. When the material body is returned to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. This spiritual being is Brahman, and is equal in quality with Putta-Brahman. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes. Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So I'll go through the summary briefly. This 13th chapter describes the regulative principles for sannyasis, and also describes the history of an avadhut. It concludes with a description of perfection for the students in spiritual advancement. Sri Narada Muni has been describing the symptoms of various ashrams and varnas. Now, in this chapter, he specifically describes the regulative principles to be followed by sannyasis. After retiring from family life, one should accept the state of vanaprast, in which he must formally accept the body as his means of existence, but gradually forget the bodily necessities of life. After vanaprast life, having left home, one should travel to different places as a sannyasi. Without bodily comforts and free from dependence on anyone with respect to bodily necessities, one should travel everywhere, wearing almost nothing, or actually walking naked. Without association with ordinary human society, one should beg alms and always be satisfied in himself. One should be a friend to every living entity and be very peaceful in Krishna consciousness. A sannyasi should travel alone in this way, not caring for life or death, waiting for the time when he will leave his material body. He should not indulge in unnecessary books or adopt professions like astrology, nor should he try to become a great orator. He should also give up the path of unnecessary argument and should not depend on anyone under any circumstances. He should not try to allure people into becoming his disciples just so that the number of his disciples may increase. He should give up the habit of reading many books as a means of livelihood, and he should not accept to increase the number of temples and mutts or monasteries. When a sannyasi thus becomes completely independent, peaceful, and equipoised, he can select the destination he desires after death and follow the principles by which to reach that destination. Although fully learned, he should always remain silent, like a dumb person, and travel like a restless child. In this regard, Narada Muni describes a meeting between Prahlad and a saintly person who had adopted the mode of life of a python. In this way, he described the symptoms of a Paramahansa. A person who has attained the Paramahansa stage knows very well the distinction between matter and spirit. He is not at all interested in gratifying the material senses, for he is always deriving pleasure from devotional service to the Lord. He is not very anxious to protect his material body. Being satisfied with whatever he attains by the grace of the Lord, he is completely independent of material happiness and distress. Thus, he is transcendental to all regulative principles. Sometimes he accepts severe austerities, and sometimes he accepts material opulence. His only concern is to satisfy Krishna without reference to the regulative principles. He is never to be equated with materialistic men, nor is he subject to the judgments of such men. Text 1. Sri Narada Muni said, "A person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge should renounce all material connections, and merely keeping the body inhabitable, he should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world." Text 2. "A person in the renounced order of life may try to avoid even a dress to cover himself. If he wears anything at all, it should be only a loincloth, and when there is no necessity, a sannyasi should not even accept a danda. A sannyasi should avoid carrying anything but a danda and kamandalu." Text 3. "A sannyasi completely satisfied in the self should live on alms begged from door to door, not being dependent on any person or any place. He should always be a friendly well-wisher to all living beings, and be a peaceful, unalloyed devotee of Narayana. In this way, he should move from one place to another." Text 4. "The sannyasi should always try to see the Supreme pervading everything, and see everything, including this universe, resting on the Supreme." And now for today's verse. Supti prabodayok sandav atmano gatim atmadrik pashyan bandham cha mokshang cha maya matram navastutaha. Supti prabodayok sandav atmano gatim atmadrik pashyan bandham cha mokshang cha maya matram navastutaha. Supti prabodayak sandav Atmano gate matmadrik. Pashyan bandhan cha mokshan cha. Maya matrang navastutaha. Ladies, please. Supti, in the state of unconsciousness. Prabodayaho, and in the state of consciousness. Sandhau, in the state of marginal existence. Atmanaha, of oneself. Gatim, the movement. Atmadrik, one who can actually see the self. Pashyan, always trying to see or understand. Bandham, the conditional state of life. Cha, and. Moksham, the liberated state of life. Cha, also. Maya matram, only illusion. Na, not. Vastutaha, in fact. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. During unconsciousness and consciousness, and between the two, he should try to understand the self and be fully situated in the self. In this way, he should realize that the conditional and liberated stages of life are only illusory and not actually factual. With such a higher understanding, he should see only the absolute truth pervading everything. Purport. The unconscious state is nothing but ignorance, darkness, or material existence. And in the conscious state, one is awake. The marginal state between consciousness and unconsciousness has no permanent existence. Therefore, one who has advanced in understanding the self should understand that unconsciousness and consciousness are but illusions, for they fundamentally do not exist. Only the Supreme Absolute Truth exists, as confirmed by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham te svavastitaha. By me in my unmanifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Everything exists on the basis of Krishna's impersonal feature. Nothing can exist without Krishna. Therefore, the advanced devotee of Krishna can see the Lord everywhere without illusion. Om Gyane Timurandasya Agananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitangyena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namaha Vishnupadaya Krishna Sahaburali Shimate Puladananda Svaitvane Namaha Vishnupadaya Krishna Sahaburali Shimate Bhaktivedanta Svaitvane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharne Nivishesha Shunivadi Pashyata Adeshitarni. So, these two chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam are describing, actually, how to gradually progress to a transcendental state of understanding. naturally being here in the material world, it's very difficult to practically, tangibly realize actually what it means that we're not this body. It's one thing to intellectually understand something, to have heard it from someone else, to have read it from a book, and to think about it, and, you know, it sounds very nice, and, oh yes, this is very wonderful, and this is the philosophy of life, and this is how things are. But really, there's no understanding there. Real understanding comes from tangible experience. Until we actually have that tangible experience, then it's not actually, as Prabhupada calls it, realized knowledge. That's what marks the difference between jnana and vijnana. Jnana is just knowledge. It's something that you hear from somebody else or something that you read in a book. Something that you get from authority. And you can toss the idea around in your head, chew on it a little bit, and it sounds very nice, and you really relish the idea of it. But until you actually have experience, it's practically of very little value. And that's why Prabhupada stressed applying this knowledge. That's also, for example, why Haridas Thakur was such an amazing devotee. Lord Chaitanya himself was glorifying Haridas Thakur for not only embodying this Siddhanta, you know, the full understanding of Krishna consciousness, at the same time he was also out preaching. He was both living what this philosophy was, and he was also spreading. Similarly, it requires more than just reading. It requires more than just hearing. It requires practical application. And that's the most difficult part. That's why Krishna consciousness isn't such an easy thing. It is an easy thing, as I've heard before. It's the easiest hard thing to do, and it's the hardest easy thing to do. Because Krishna consciousness is very simple. All we have to do is chant, dance, and feast on Krishna prasad. It's very easy. But it's very difficult because we have to overcome all these blocks, all these upadis. That's what these chapters are talking about. It's talking about how to gradually elevate our consciousness so we can free ourselves from all these different designations. That's what upadi means, designation. And so I find it rather amusing how sometimes different people, different devotees, in the name of freeing ourselves from upadis, are actually embracing and rigidly clinging to other upadis. You know, claiming that, oh, I can be a devotee regardless of all these other things. I don't need to observe things like dress. And then they get so wrapped up in it that they're creating another upadi. Now they're identifying with one particular lifestyle. Oh, I'm a Western devotee. Whatever that means. They're just adding another upadi upon their false ego. It's another identification. Oh, I'm a Western devotee, so I have to wear a Western dress, and everyone in the temple should wear a Western dress, and they should wear a Western dress on the altar. And you're not a real devotee unless you wear a Western dress. This isn't the philosophy. This isn't what Prabhupada taught. What we're reading in these verses here is what Prabhupada is teaching. We have to give up all these false identifications. Sarvapadi vinirmutam. We have to be liberated from all these designations. And we have to take the guidance of the previous acharyas. As Srila Rupa Goswami said, the nectar of instruction. You know, that we can't... My brain just blanked out on the word. What's that term where you neglect the rules and regulations? Yeah, niyamagraha. We can't become niyamagrahas. The rules and regulations are there for a reason. But at the same time, we can't lose sight of what the ultimate principle that the rules and regulations are there to help us understand. So on the one hand, certain things like dress code, it's a rule and regulation. Yes, in and of itself, wearing a particular dress won't make us Krishna conscious. That's true. However, we can't lose sight of the fact of what these rules and regulations are there to help us understand. And even if it's not for us, it's for society in general. I was on the altar dressing Rukmini Dwarkadish yesterday listening to a lecture from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was even addressing this very issue. He was saying, just like the police wear an official uniform. And why is that? One, it's so the police officer himself helps remember what it is that he stands for, what it is that he's representing, so he'll act in a proper way. And two, it's so society in general will understand this is an officer of the law. I can go to a person wearing this uniform for protection. So Prabhupada was saying that this is our uniform. You know, wearing so-called Vaishnav dress. It's not Hindu dress. This isn't a Hindu movement. There is no such thing as Hindu, really. It's just a misunderstanding of upadhi, designation. It's just that somebody couldn't pronounce a word right, and they put a blanket statement on everyone living east of a particular river. Ultimately, Hindu has no meaning. What does it mean to be a Hindu? It's not even mentioned in the Shastras. We're not Hindus. So this is what Prabhupada is helping us to realize. Even in the military, they wear uniforms. It's not that, you know, you're only a soldier if you're wearing your uniform. Or wearing a uniform is going to prevent you from being a soldier. No. You wear your uniform when you're on duty. When you're off duty, you wear whatever it is that you want to wear. So in the same way, these different rules and regulations that we observe it to help us understand these principles of life. And these principles are there to help gradually elevate our consciousness out of all these material designations, out of identifying with this material body, everything in this material world. That's what these verses are talking about. That's why there are so many different rules and regulations for sannyasis. Ultimately, the understanding is that a sannyasi should be renouncing everything. Anything that ties the individual to this material world is what the sannyasi should be renouncing, trying to break all these different attachments. Because it's so difficult to get out of this identification, to give up all these different upadis, and to realize that there is nothing in this material world that I am connected with. That's the most difficult thing to understand. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about this in the 13th chapter. Specifically in texts 20 through 24 and 27 and 28. I'll just read those translations. Material nature and living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and modes of matter are products of material nature. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. That's actually a very interesting verse. Verse 21. You know, Krishna is saying in so many words that everything that we see and experience in this material world is simply a product of material nature and its transformations. And it's independent of whatever suffering and enjoyment is going on. So the suffering and enjoyment is simply a product of our conscious witness of these causes and effects. The causes and effects that happen mechanically. And there is no suffering or enjoyment inherent within those causes and effects. It's only the fact that we're consciously witnessing it and identifying with it is what produces the suffering and enjoyment. Text 22, the living entity and material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. In other words, we're identifying with these different material elements. We're identifying with the modes of ignorance, the mode of passion, or the mode of goodness. And based upon this identification, we're meeting various good or evil experiences lifetime after lifetime. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, who is known as the Supersoul. In other words, the Supersoul is the backdrop upon which all these other activities are happening. It's the foundation. Nothing would happen without the Supersoul. The Supersoul is overseeing and permitting everything in this material world to happen. As the saying goes, not even a blade of grass moves without God's sanction. In the same way, the Supersoul is overseeing, permitting every single thing that happens, whether it be good or evil. Because Krishna, the Supersoul, recognizes that people are here trying to satisfy their own selfish interests. They're trying to enjoy each of these different modes. Ignorance, passion, and goodness. Ignorance by necessity is so-called evil. Goodness by necessity is so-called good. And passion is mixed. Believe it or not, people actually can get and try to enjoy through the mode of ignorance. It's mentioned elsewhere in the Bhagavatam that that's actually why Kali Yuga exists. These four different yuga cycles exist so people can try to enjoy predominantly through one or a combination of these modes of material nature. Kali Yuga is specifically here so people can try to enjoy the mode of ignorance. One who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of nature is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. That's the whole point. We have to practically understand this philosophy. How it's all just an interaction of the modes of material nature, and we actually have nothing whatsoever to do with it. The soul never has any direct interaction with this material energy. The soul is eternal, it's spiritual in nature. By definition, it cannot and can never have any interaction with matter, with material nature. It's simply our false identification with this matter from which arises the sufferings and enjoyments, like Krishna said previously in text 21. Whereas living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. We're the cause because of our attachments, our identifications. That's what causes the suffering and enjoyment. So that's why we have to see through this illusion. Once we understand that it's simply an interaction of the modes of material nature, we're guaranteed liberation, no matter what situation we're in. That's why ultimately, it's not encouraged that we identify with Varnashram. The four Varnas and the four Ashrams are all material designations. They're all Upadis. It's unnecessary. Yes, it's necessary and it's helpful in one sense, but on the other sense, it's unnecessary. That's why it's so important to understand that fine line of Niyamagraha. On the one hand, the rules and regulations are there to help elevate our consciousness out of this material world. So we shouldn't falsely neglect under a plea of false advancement. We shouldn't neglect these rules and regulations. But at the same time, we can't become so fanatical that we lose sight of the purpose of these rules and regulations, and then criticize people who have transcended, who have gone beyond the necessity of these rules and regulations. Elsewhere, Prabhupada has mentioned, though, that those who have actually gone beyond the necessity for these rules and regulations in their consciousness, they still observe the rules and regulations so that the rest of society is not misled. Otherwise, it would cause chaos within society. Prabhupada mentions this in the Nectar Devotion. Going further, O chief of the Bharatas, knowing that whatever you see in existence, both moving and the non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. One who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. So this is exactly what is being mentioned by Narada Muni in this 11th and 12th chapter of the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni is elaborating upon these instructions by Krishna, giving it in greater depth and detail. So this is what we have to come to realize. This is what we have to come to understand. Because just hearing that, oh, we're not this body, we're a spirit soul, and we don't belong to this material world, and we're all spiritual in nature, you know, that's all fine and well. But that's not going to actually do you any good. It's not going to bring you any benefit. We have to take that knowledge and practically apply it. But that's where people get lost, because they wonder, well, how do I apply this? How do I practically realize this within my life? So that's what Narada Muni is explaining within these chapters. He's explaining how, through using this tool called Varna Ashram, four Varnas, four occupations of life, and four Ashrams, four spiritual modes of living, by operating within this structure of Varnashram, we can come to practically realize that I'm not this body. That everything I see within this world is simply a transformation of the three modes of material nature. It's simply a product of this field of experience, and that I am simply the knower of this field. I'm just observing and choosing which of these experiences within this field I will call my life. So through practical experience, through practical knowledge, realization, we can come to see that no, I'm not any of these upadis. I'm not any of these designations. I'm not a Western devotee. I'm not an Eastern devotee. I'm not a Chinese devotee. I'm not an American devotee. I'm not a Latino devotee. Just like within America, the United States, is a place that's comprised of immigrants. Everyone within the United States comes from a different country. This is just an example. So in reality, everyone in the United States should be identifying with being just simply an American. Someone from the United States. Not, I'm Indo-American, or I'm a European-American, or I'm an Afro-American, or I'm a Chinese-American. These are all false upadis, just like Prabhupada is saying about the United Nations. It's a farce. There's nothing united about the United Nations. They call themselves so-called united, but what happens? Every year, more and more flags are being added. How is this united? If it's really united, every year there should be fewer and fewer flags. Until there's only one flag. One united nation of the world. That's united nation. We shouldn't be subdividing ourselves into all these false upadis. Well, I'm this ethnicity and you're that ethnicity and my skin tone has less pigmentation than your skin tone, or my skin tone has more pigmentation than your skin tone. Or I have this genitalia, you have that genitalia. These are all false upadis. And especially as devotees, we can't get caught up in identifying with these. It's ridiculous. It goes completely against our philosophy. We're simply Krishna's devotees, and that's the bottom line. We're not Western devotees or Eastern devotees. We're not Hindus. We're just plain devotees. So just be a devotee and try to apply these teachings within your life in the progressive manner that's been taught to us by their previous acharyas. And we will transcend these false designations. Don't worry. It's a mechanical system. That's why it's called Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. By definition, it's mechanical. Because we're not there on the spontaneous platform yet. But just like a manual transmission vehicle, if you put it in first gear and have a bunch of people pushing, through the mechanical process of having the pistons turn, eventually combustion will happen spontaneously. In the same way, by simply going through the mechanical process of Vaidhi Sadhana, following the rules and regulations, eventually that combustion will spontaneously happen. That love for Krishna will ignite. It doesn't need separate practice. Falsely thinking, I'm a gopi, or, I'm like a mother or father to Krishna, and falsely practicing in this way. No, it will spontaneously happen. Prabhupada even said that even if at the point of death we don't know what our transcendental position is, that's no big deal. If you actually get liberated, if you actually go back to the spiritual world, you'll automatically know. It doesn't require foreknowledge. Automatically you'll know what your swarup is. So simply engage in Krishna consciousness and don't worry all these false upadis and all these false understandings. or try to artificially become more advanced than you actually are. Just be practical about it. Engage in your service. Follow the process. And automatically, spontaneously, it'll happen. Just like Prabhupada said, you do enough hearing and chanting about Krishna, and then what'll happen? Spontaneously, without your endeavoring, you'll spontaneously begin remembering Krishna. Spontaneous remembrance of Krishna is Raghunuga Bhakti. That's beyond the Vaidhi platform. So don't worry about it. Just engage in the mechanical process and everything will naturally happen. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Yes. Well, that's the difference between a devotee and somebody who is in the Varna Ashram system. A devotee is actually transcendental to Varna and Ashrama. Varna and Ashrama are material designations. A Vaishnav is transcendental to Varna Ashram. A Vaishnav adopts whatever principles are necessary for spreading and furthering Krishna consciousness. So in Prabhupada's case, he was externally acting as a sannyasi. But he's a Vaishnav. So he adopted whatever principles were necessary to spread Krishna consciousness. Whether that meant conducting business transactions like a Vaishya, whether that meant organizing and structuring society like a Kshatriya, or teaching like a Brahmin, he was above all that. He was above being a sannyasi. He was above being a vanaprast or a grihastha. He adopted whatever principles were necessary to further Krishna consciousness, which is actually what a Vaishnav is. A Vaishnav is beyond Varna Ashram. We are not these different designations of Varna and Ashram. Just like I remember one sannyasi telling his disciple, because his disciple was saying that he really wanted to be a good example of a particular ashram. And his guru said, I don't care what ashram you're in. It doesn't matter. It was kind of crushing to the disciple, but that's the truth. Ashram doesn't matter. Whether you're brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. The point is to be Krishna conscious and adopt whatever means are necessary for spreading Krishna consciousness within society. Is that okay? Yes, well that's where the fine line of Niyamagraha comes into play. We have to understand and be honest with where we are. For instance, if you're a grihastha with a wife and children, you can't neglect those responsibilities. You can't just falsely renounce when your wife and children are depending upon you and, you know, take sannyas and just, you know, leave them to the winds of fate. Of course, in our society, not particularly within this present generation, but in the past, there are many examples of that. But at the same time, we have to take into consideration time, place, and circumstance. In those previous ages, when devotees would take sannyas like that, society was set up so that those left behind, so to speak, were still protected. They were still taken care of and provided for. It's not that they were just left to the dogs and devoured by cruel fate of nature. No, their families would take care of them. Just like when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. He took sannyas at a very young age. He was, how old was he, 24? You know, and he had a very young wife. And she had no way of fending for herself. But yet when he took sannyas, you know, she was still taken care of. In modern society, that's not the case, especially here in the West. You know, if one were to falsely take sannyas and abandon their family without any means of support, yes, there wouldn't be any means of support. There wouldn't be any protection. It would be a very precarious situation. That's why within our society there were established certain regulations, certain rules prohibiting that. You know, so now when somebody wants to take sannyas, there has to be proof that their wife and or children will still be protected and taken care of, that they won't just be abandoned to the wind. Yeah, we all could do a better job, but specifically where we've encountered the most amount of difficulty within our society has been from grihasthas and sannyasis. You know, specifically sannyasis who have disciples, and then grihasthas who are married and have children. You know, that's where most of the problems within our society has come from. So, yes, we should properly observe the rules and regulations for the particular ashrams, but at the same time, we shouldn't lose sight of what those rules and regulations are for and just become like a Niyamagraha, completely attached to those rules and regulations. You know, we have to understand that first and foremost, we're devotees, we're Vaishnavas. And secondarily, we follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma simply so we can have proper order within society. Is that okay? Okay. Anyone else? Yes? It's not a contradiction at all. A Vaishnav, a real devotee, somebody who is actually on that platform, is transcendental. Their consciousness is completely spiritual. They understand aham brahmasmi. I am spiritual. I'm a spirit soul in nature. I am not of this material world. I am not this material body. Varnashram Dharma does not exist in the spiritual world. It's not necessary. Varnashram is simply a tool. You know, just like there are different tools like a craftsman, for instance, like Ratnabhushan. You know, you go in his workshop and he has so many different tools in his workshop, and his tools help him do things. You know, the tool is simply a means to an end. It's not the end in and of itself. Understand that? So Varnashram Dharma is a tool. It's a tool to be used to help us understand that I am a spirit soul. Once you understand practically through tangible experience that I am a spirit soul, then that tool has served its purpose and the tool is no longer necessary. But, as explained by Rupa Goswami, as long as that spirit soul is still within this material society, he still abides by the rules and regulations of Varnashram so as not to bewilder the rest of society. Otherwise, society would fall into chaos. because they would be wondering the same thing. They would falsely think, beyond their spiritual realization, that, well, if this is simply a tool and it's really not necessary, then what do I need to follow it for? Without realizing that they're still materially conscious. They're not liberated. And so out of a false sense of spiritual advancement, they'll falsely renounce using this particular tool when they need to use it. So that's the distinction. Is that clear? What was that? That's right. That's what it's for. So I'll end there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.